And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, we're going to talk about
wins,
dubs, Mikal Bridges, dancing on the graves of Kyrie and KD. Ooh, a little bit, just okay. a little jig,
just the last vestiges
from your boy.
Gotta do it. Gotta be done.
A St. Patrick's Day jig. And hey, we're previewing some playoff matchups. We're looking ahead a little bit because
is that crazy? Is that crazy?
I'm a little buzzed about this team. I'm a little not. Anyways,
yeah. Don't get too buzzed. Let's get into the show.
To the Glue Guys, this is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BK Glue Guys, netsdaily.com, The Athletic. Get yourself behind the paywall at theathletic.com/glue guys. This is the time of the year to get behind that paywall because there are mock NFL drafts. There will be NCAA tournament coverage, which is happening right now. If you want to be smart about what picks to make in your pool, get behind that paywall at theathletic.com/glue guys. Again, a subsidiary of the New York Times company whose stock price is stock price. I just figured it is up.
Wow.
0.01%.
Nice. Get in there now.
We got that bump. They get that Glue Guys bump. Brian.
My goal.
Actually, now it's back down.
Shoot.
If I did that for the whole show, was that good podcasting? Yeah, Brian's camera is off.
A little fuzzy.
People have been wanting us to talk about the Nets because the Nets are buoyant.
Okay.
One of your favorite terms. No, but things have been happening since the disgusting Knicks loss, which I think we avoided. And maybe we talked about that Boston, the dub against Boston. I don't remember the last time we potted, but the Nets are 5-1 over the last 6 games. Sure, I'm cherry picking, mm-hmm. but our nation was founded on a cherry picker in George Washington.
Wow.
Wasn't that, didn't he chop down a cherry tree?
I believe he did. Yeah, there's some chopping.
So, which is also, it's not, that never happened, but hashtag the Nets are hot.
Yes.
Brian.
Did you watch the game, the big Denver game? The comeback that wasn't from Denver?
Dude, this team, because they don't have a closer like KD or Kyrie.
And Spencer trying to close those games is... I love Spencer, but that is a role that he should outsource, I do believe.
I mean, Spencer's been, we could talk, I think we should talk about Spencer in this role as being like lead ball handler, bro.
Mm-hmm.
He had 16 assists.
No, I mean, awesome game. It's just the closing time.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
Yeah. And that is what's, you know, so there's positives and negatives about this new version of the Nets,
mm-hmm.
the post-KD Kyrie version of the Nets, which I want to interrogate here on this very show with you.
Yeah.
Let's start with the positive before we get in on maybe a little negative. Not that we're going to talk about negative, but it's an analysis, Brian. You and I are basketball analysts.
We're not fans.
That's what it says on my website.
We're analysts. We go deep.
Yeah. Obviously, Mikal Bridges has been better than I think anyone could have expected. I remember when the trade happened.
Yeah.
And I'm a romantic. The second I meet, second Bridges came into my life, I was like, I'm going to wrap my arms around him and declare that he's better than Scotty Barnes or Jaylen Brown or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
He has proven my love to be worthy.
Yeah.
Because he has become, is he a bona fide number one? No, but he has elevated into at least being a respectable number one.
Here's where he's been elevated to. At least give him the space to find out if he can be a number one, because it still feels like the ceiling is, it just keeps kind of growing as the games go on. I mean, I don't know. I think also, and I know this is going to be an unpopular thing to do, but maybe a little credit to Sean Marks for seeing through the noise.
It's too soon, buddy. We can't credit Sean Marks or Jacques Vaughn with anything.
A little credit might be due to see through the noise. You know, a lot of good players over in Phoenix. He may have seen something there, Mike, that meant Mikal Bridges was an optimal target. I'm not trying to give him all the
credit.
You're
like a Republican who is like, whatever you want to say about Trump, he packed the courts. He packed the courts. You know, whatever you want to say.
I mean, that's the one good take. I mean, it's logically consistent. You know, he packed the courts. And in this case, he finds
Sean Marks is Donald
he
Trump.
He finds diamonds in the rough. I was going to say Donald's in the rough. He finds diamonds in the rough. And I don't know. I mean, I think I'm open to the idea that, like, if we just give him a little bit more space, like, I'm not going to start doubting Mikal Bridges now. There's no room for doubt for me. I mean, whether he's a first 1A, you know, kind of superstar, like, I don't know. It remains to be seen is kind of a crazy thing to say.
The place I'm at with him is that he's already a malleable scoring wing.
Yes.
Meaning that, so even if, like, let's say the Nets go star hunting again, and they say everyone on the roster's off limits except for Bridges.
Yeah.
So I think ultimately Bridges is going to settle in as a pretty good number two, because he's not really a guy who can get you like 7-8 assists a game from the wing position.
Fair.
He has proven some certain very important things. He's not truly a ball handler, and that's why we have to rely on Spencer Dinwiddie at the end of games to make something happen. But there's something important to point out with him.
Okay.
Okay, so there's this archetype of the role player, super talented role player getting traded and then exploding.
Yeah.
James Harden from Thunder to the Rockets. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from the Clippers to the Thunder. Though that's been a pretty long period of time with which that has happened.
Yeah.
The difference between those two guys and Bridges is that those two guys, one where I think were younger when they got to their new team, and also even on their old teams, they were ball handlers. They were somewhat explosive guards. I mean, even Shai at that young age when he was with the Clippers, he was like running the show ostensibly with the Clippers at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Bridges was a fourth option in Phoenix.
Let's call it what it is, fourth option.
It was CP3 having the ball as he should. It was Devin Booker ISOs. It was Ayton down low getting his touches, and then it was Bridges in the corner shooting threes.
Yeah,
and Bridges in that offense was like there was no ball handling to be had. There was no times when he really had to put up a bad shot. Right? I mean, I know there were times, but if he's on the floor with Booker, Booker's taking those bad shots.
Yeah,
right. And he deserves to. And so what's unique, what's happening with Bridges is that he is ascending in a rapid period of time. I think he's only played 13 games with the Nets, and expanding into this role that is an unusual leap from being a 3-and-D guy to being a number one option, where the archetypes in the past have always been pretty much ball handling guards like Harden. Yeah. It's easier for those guys to increase and ascend because they already know how to handle the ball and get to the bucket. Where Bridges is doing, I mean, he's doing some mid-range stuff, which he probably never got to really do in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
He is being more aggressive. In fact, this game against the Nuggets was not really one of his best games from the floor, but he still got 9 free throw attempts, and a guy who's that good as a free throw shooter. It is something to be buoyed by, Brian.
Get buoyed.
There should be buoys out there.
Yeah.
We should be saving the buoys.
I wanted to mention, we don't have to do it now, but I did want to mention that your guy, Nerlens Noel, is a part of the team now, Mike. We haven't potted in a while. We got to like knock some dust off of these takes, but he played some minutes. Do you like it? I mean, I just feel like that's one of your guys. Well, just like any kind of like waiver wire, a waiver wire center is really, that's cream of the crop for Mike Smeltz.
I mean, if I could just have a pod about waiver wire centers and centers in the G League who get 3 blocks a game, and I'm going to be like, that's the next Dikembe Mutombo. That'd be my dream pod. I know the listenership would be.
It's a good pod.
Like maybe Matt Brooks and myself, but that's where I would want to live. The funny thing about, I mean, I tweeted this out at the time. And can I ask, to pivot off Nerlens Noel for a second? And again, I want to talk more about Dorian Finney-Smith, Spencer Dinwiddie. I tweeted out something last night that people hated.
Oh, you did?
People absolutely hated what I said.
What did you say?
Okay, so I didn't see the Nets have this great win against the Nuggets.
Oh gosh.
You know, and I did say other stuff before I tweeted this out, but I said, I hate to do this. I should just enjoy the moment. But this team is the perfect Ben Simmons team. If Ben Simmons was who he used to be, I mean, the fact that...
And you added that as part of the tweet, if Ben Simmons is who he used to be?
I said if this was old Ben Simmons, yeah. People didn't even want to hear about it because people don't want to hear about Ben Simmons anymore.
True.
And you bring up Nerlens Noel. It's like the second they signed him, I had tweeted out essentially, where's Ben Simmons going to play if Nerlens Noel is like getting minutes?
The backup center.
Because I think Nerlens Noel had probably had some market, even though he's not like amazing, but there's probably some level of like contenders really wanted him, and the Nets probably promised some level of opportunity.
Yeah.
Is Ben Simmons coming back? Is this like everything that they're saying? We're not shutting him down. We're getting closer and closer to we're shutting him down. Time.
It appears to be a quiet shutdown. It does not a you've heard of quiet quitting. This is the quiet shutdown. I get the sense.
Is Ben Simmons. Yeah. That is like the slow. He's ghosting the Nets at this time.
I think it's not just. I think it's all parties involved. If I could assume something, and maybe this is out of pocket, but I think Jacques Vaughn does not like Ben Simmons. I think Jacques Vaughn, especially at this in this kind of moment right now, a lot of what we're living and dying on is effort. And Ben Simmons does not pass the sniff test effort-wise on a nightly basis. And I think that's the thing that really gets under Jacques Vaughn's skin, if I could guess. And this is really, it's not based on any real evidence at all. Truly, just crazy reporting here. But
Also, Jacques Vaughn literally said when Ben Simmons was playing, he essentially was like, it's really tough to have Ben Simmons on the floor.
He did. Because he did have a press conference about big, don't expect to see much Ben Simmons because he sucks and I hate him.
If you don't have another big, it's pretty hard to protect the rim because that's like Ben Simmons, while he could be a small ball five, doesn't protect the rim. It's just not, he's not equipped to do that.
Yeah.
And when there is another big on the floor who's like Nick Claxton, and if it's Dorian Finney-Smith, Nick Claxton, and Ben Simmons, you're giving up a lot of like, I mean, Finney-Smith can have good shooting games, he can have bad ones, but Claxton and Simmons together is rough, and it has been rough for the entire time. I don't know, and I don't want this. Well, we're gonna have so many pods about like what to do with Ben Simmons.
Is that you're like, what? Everyone hated this and didn't want to talk about it, and so now we're gonna start the show with it.
Because I feel like I have to explain myself, and I just want people to picture, it's unfair to do. I don't know why, it's like, why can't, this is a bad comparison, but like, why can't Kanye just make My Dark Twisted Fantasy? Why does he have to make Life of Pablo and also, be anti-Semitic? It's like, it's kind of like who Kanye is at this point. Ben Simmons is who he is at this point, but I am picturing My Dark Twisted Fantasy version of Ben Simmons. Ben ball handling, athletic, attacking Ben Simmons, surrounded by Bridges, Cam Johnson, Dorian Finney-Smith. You could have Nick Claxton out there. You could have Spencer Dinwiddie out there. Dinwiddie's a pretty good off-ball handler to complement a old version of Ben Simmons. Because Dinwiddie, he was off-ball successfully with Luka. Sure, he's not a great shooter. I think part of his bad shooting always leads to when Spencer has to force threes. I mean, he was 0-for-7 from three. Mm-hmm. It's bad. When he can be more picky and choosy, like any NBA player, his percentages and his effectiveness goes up.
I mean, I think we all know Spencer sort of thrives in the first PG combo guard off the bench role. I mean, you get a good point.
Thrives.
Like, people don't want to hear it. The masses don't want to hear this. But you're right. If you do get a 2018 version of Ben Simmons, this team would benefit from it. You're right.
Can I tell you, let's say Ben Simmons plays. Let's say he does come back this season. First, this season.
Yeah, we're with it.
Does it raise or lower the Nets' ability to win playoff games? I think it lowers the Nets' ability.
Yeah.
Be honest.
No, I know.
Be honest.
It's contingent.
Is this manufactured tension?
Let's do it. Well, it is contingent on, as you say correctly, that if he's at the 2018 version of Ben Simmons, that changes things materially. I don't know. I've lost a little faith that we can get back to that point, Mike. I will be honest and say I've lost a little faith in that.
Before we go to break, I do want to compliment Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah.
For a second.
No, we did, because we came in a little bit hot and that wasn't right.
Because, okay, this is the positive negative dual double-edged sword situation with this team.
Mm-hmm.
Who's not falling in love with this team right now? I mean, they beat the Nuggets. They beat a fully charged, healthy Nuggets team.
No excuses
for these Nuggets.
The sick some bitch who isn't in love with this team right now. I want to meet them. I want to see them.
They competed so hard against Jokic. Jokic had 35, 11 assists, and 20 rebounds. And yet, like, we were talking on the phone, and it was like the Nets made him work for all of that triple-double.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge stat line, and if you didn't watch the game, you'd be like, oh, okay, standard Jokic, like, dominant thing. But it actually was kind of they for their parts with their small, undersized players, like, they did really good ball denial on him. Like, all of that 35 points came in real ticky-tacky, hard-earned ways.
It really could have been a 45-point or a 50-point night.
It should have been.
If they didn't try so hard. The thing I love about this version of the Nets, I mean, this is recency bias. Again, they lost to the Knicks 143 to like 110 or whatever it was. And that game was not competitive from jump. But there's moments when the defense, the swarming arm, the tarantula level defense, just swarming arms, they collapsed on Jokic on one play, where it was like Dorian Finney-Smith, Cam Johnson, and Nick Claxton surrounding Jokic, and Jokic passes it out for three, and Bridges goes from like the top of the key to the corner during that pass, and the Nuggets hit the shot, corner three, Jokic pass, that's going to happen. But Bridges' ability to contest that shot from the top of the key while the rest of the Nets are swarming. I mean, Dorian Finney-Smith is... I know that there is negative there. I understand it, but he is so uniquely talented in terms of length, physicality, athleticism.
Yeah.
He's the type of guy I've always fallen in love with. Sure. Like, just, I forgive almost all, if you show me effort and length, like, I'm like, you are in my Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
This team, and we'll get to it when we talk about playoff matchups potentially.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be tough, Bri. They are. They have a. There's a uniqueness to them, and the uniqueness is such a opposite from what we were used to.
Yeah,
from the KD Kyrie.
And in the uniqueness, there's sort of baked into that kind of adaptability. Like, I was watching the Nuggets broadcast version of that game. Weirdly, as I like to do, I'd like to get inside the heads of the analysts over there and hear what they're saying. The homerism, and they were like, "Whoa, the Nets are being like." Obscenely physical with Jokic. Like, this is a problem. It's really upsetting. And everyone was upset. You know, they were offended and upset. And when
Jokic he was so furious.
I can't remember, like, even dating back to, you know, 6 weeks ago or whatever. Like, have we ever been, like, being aggressive has never been part of a data point that you could, an opposing team's broadcast would pick up. It's like, you know, that just wasn't a thing.
No,
and
not a single one of our players was aggressive.
It was particularly aggressive on that side of the floor.
I'm thinking, like, Royce O'Neal maybe had two games where he was aggressive.
Right.
And then Cam Thomas is aggressive in the sense that he will put up anything.
Well, we tried to get Markieff Morris for his aggressiveness, and he was like, gotcha, fooled you. I'm here to chuck threes, boy. So
3-point line to 3-point line.
Yeah. So we haven't had that, and it was great to see. It's just like it's a whole new world for us, Mike. It's a whole new team.
Listen, quick break. Coming back, I do want to talk a little bit more about this team. I want to look at the alternate reality, the multiverse, the everything, everywhere, all at once. That's a topical reference.
It is topical.
They won every Oscar, and then we'll do playoff matchups. As I said, coming back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And we're back. Brian?
Yeah.
Cam Johnson.
Okay.
I didn't prep you for this. I don't know how I... So Cam Johnson, there's a report, I think, from the New York Post, Brian Lewis, over the weekend, that Cam Johnson is staring at a potentially $20 million plus deal. Like, mm-hmm. That's what he's going to get on the market. He's a restricted free agent.
Yeah.
This offseason. I don't know how I feel about him yet. Bridges, I'm in love with.
Yeah.
I want to buy his jersey for all my kids. Cam Johnson.
Yeah.
I'm unsure of how committed I'm going to be to him. What is your view? What has been your scouting report on Cam?
It's interesting because he has kind of flown under the radar in all of what's been happening. Because you're right, because there hasn't been like a necessarily like Cam Johnson moment, I guess, or like series of moments. But like as I look through his like box scores, so not to box score monitor, like he's been good and it's been like going well. So like, you know, it's easy to be like, yeah, he's been like a cool stabilizing force. Obviously, he's like best buddies with Mikal Bridges and, you know, protect the vibe at all costs, of course. That's our new motto.
that is the new motto, yeah. Protect the vibe. I love it.
And so is it worth $20 million to protect the vibe? I don't know. Could be. But yeah, in terms of like the ceiling sort of stuff of everything, I'm not a big buyer into a very large ceiling beyond what he's shown to this point. And I don't know if that kind of salary reflects, hey, there's potential for you to have a bigger role than the one that you currently have. So yeah, I mean, like, I guess in a world in which we're continuing on with like, you know, some greater than the whole of parts and protecting the vibes, and like this is a real kind of coalition based team, like I'm for it if we're in a position actually. And that those types of contracts too are pretty good. not to get too mercenary minded, but
Jesus, Brian.
That is a particularly
have some respect for this roster,
particularly tradable sort of pay grade. So there's that. So yeah, maybe just I've talked myself into it. I think we do it.
Yeah, I mean, so here's a couple of reference points. The Nets pay Joe Harris about, you know, they're paying him 18.6 right now. He's going to be paid $20 million next year, 19.9, but I'm going to round up to $20 million for Joe Harris. So one, I don't think Joe Harris is, like, if you're going to pay Cam Johnson, I think you flip Joe Harris for what you can get. I think there's value in it in for the Nets to take Joe Harris's, you know, expiring deal and sending him to another team who maybe has a guy on a longer term contract who they're less thrilled by, but is for less money per year, and the Nets scoop up, you know, that longer term guy and they trade out Joe Harris. So if I'm quibbling over, let's say, I mean, I think Cam Johnson is like maybe a $25 million per game, per season guy. Mm-hmm. Just because he is 6'8". He is entering, he's 27 years old right now. He just turned 27 recently. So it's like this is like the arc mm-hmm. of his career to ascend to that final level. You know, and I'm misrepresenting, I guess, how he's been so far. He's had good games. It's just that like his best game as a Net came in that Knicks game. He scored 33 points and was ultra efficient, 7 for 11 from three. But it came in a game when everyone checked out. He had 27 points against the Hawks in a loss, the 129-127, another game that the Nets probably should have won, and they didn't. He has scored in double figures in every game as a Net except for one, which was the Rockets game where he only played 24 minutes. Mm-hmm. So he is putting up numbs.
Yeah.
He is he's had really good games, but they've come in games maybe when it didn't matter as much. I think in general, I don't think this is controversial. He is a higher ceiling than Joe Harris has ever had.
Currently, for sure.
Yeah, because like Joe is like at one point was like a top three shooter in the NBA.
Yeah.
Like he was still limited by the fact that he is a little bit shorter than Cam Johnson, and Cam's like extra bit of length is making a difference defensively, is making a difference in terms of flexibility in lineups. I just wonder if this team, like Cam Johnson and what the Nets do with him, is going to be really indicative of what Joe Tsai and Sean Marks want to do with this team going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they could very easily sign and trade him to someone else, pick up more draft picks, and just be like, the price just got too high. I would hope and guess that they're going to match any offer that comes his way. And they may be even proactive to say, we're going to give you that. We're going to offer you 3 years at $23 million a year, you know, and just like kind of put it out there so that it doesn't become another team offer a max contract. And I will say that, Brian.
Yeah, please.
There's this, I saw Brian Lewis tweet that I'm not even shading Brian Lewis. I'm not burying him
for an
incorrect take. But there's this belief that NBA GMs want to go after Sean Marks and his restricted free agents for how Sean Marks, when the Nets were rebuilding, lavished restricted free agents with max contract offers and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Think of Tyler Johnson with Miami, Alan Crabb in Portland.
Huge get.
And Otto Porter with the Wizards.
Yeah.
Right? And there may have been one more.
Man, we wanted Otto Porter something bad in those years.
It was the Otto Porter or KCP combos. Yeah. That was the pod. And like, you know, Aaron Gordon was so lustily wanted by the Nets fan base at one point, and he's like a fine player.
He's fine.
There's this belief that like NBA GMs, this is the time for to pay back Sean Marks, you know, because they're gonna throw money at Cam Johnson. Okay, well, just look at each of those cases. Ernie Grunfeld was running the Wizards. Sure, Tommy Shepard, the current GM, was second in command, but Ernie Grunfeld's gone.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who was running Portland, I even forget his name, he's gone. Okay, so the Alan Crabbness of it all, that's gone. And really, the Nets kind of bailed out, unfortunately, the Portland Trailblazers by trading for Alan Crabb.
Mm-hmm.
In Miami, it's Pat Riley. And ultimately, like, I don't even think the Heat can even get to a place where they could offer Cam Johnson that money, unless if they ship off Duncan Robinson for nothing.
Right.
So it's like, while the NBA GMs may be a little extra motivated, like those group, most of them are gone.
Yeah.
And it's all Pat Riley. Now, Pat Riley, he's
he knows how villain. To hold a grudge. He does know how to hold a grudge.
He does. Yeah. But I don't know if he even has the ability to screw with the Nets to that level.
There's a correlation between grudge holding and hair gel, don't you think? Like the more hair gel, the longer the grudge. I think it's just a thought.
Who is a good example of a lot of hair gel but no grudge? Is there anyone in the history of
I can't think of him.
Of time?
I mean, I don't know. Kenny Atkinson, I'm sure. I think he holds
grudges.
I don't know
grudges. If that was gel. I think it was just sweat spit. That calcified.
Spit.
It just formed on his head and just stuck in place.
I'm
pretty
sure that's half a bottle of LA Lux right there each game.
Because like Steve Nash, no gel. Maybe a little mousse.
No, and he has no grudges. You can tell he's back to longboarding Venice Beach.
Yeah, he transitioned pretty easily out of coaching.
That's it.
All this to say, Cam Johnson's the one thing that the Nets are going to have to look for. The other one is like, there's a bunch of offseason questions, so I don't really want to go down them. But he's like the one hanging chad of this all.
Yeah.
Before we get to playoff matchups, can I just say one thing?
Please.
Kevin Durant and Kyrie. Okay, I can't quit them.
I know. It's still early. We have to give ourselves time and space to process.
This is the part of the breakup when you're looking at your ex's Instagram page and you're like, you're trying to pick them apart, right? And they may seem, oh, look, they're I don't know, they're getting coffee by the West Side Highway. But you're like,
disgusting. Disgusting coffee, yeah. Idiot.
Yeah.
Freak.
Yeah, you got it at like Blue Bottle when we know Blue Bottle's just on my Nestle now.
Yeah.
It's not even that cool. Hashtag not that cool. The KD's hurt. He got hurt. And I don't cherish that.
He got hurt warming up, Mike.
Warming up. And I don't cherish it. Okay? But he got hurt warming up.
Don't be spiteful, Mike. Don't be spiteful. No, no, no.
Kyrie, though.
Did you, by the way, see the Skip Bayless thing where... Did you watch this?
Oh, wait, the thing where he has him get married?
No, after that was Rick Buecher, KD sprained his ankle, Skip Bayless did like a 5-minute... Like, you would have thought KD got hit by a bus. Like, he was like, this... this is a tragedy for the NBA. Like, this is insane. They just said they're like having it. Yeah. Anyways, you should all send it. You should watch it.
You've been, to go to the Kyrie side of it, people don't know that Brian's he's our mole. He goes down deep into the depths of other teams' fan bases, into their Reddit and into their comments thread, and analyzes, you know, when we make a trade, mm-hmm. what they think of that guy, or post-trade, what the new fan base thinks of the new guy. How do you think the Mavs fans are feeling about Kyrie, who the team is 5-7 since Kyrie has come over? The Nets have a better record over that span of time mm-hmm. than Mavericks feel have.
It is an amazing thing to just see what period in time they are. And because it's like, you know, time is a flat circle memes, all that stuff. It's amazing to see them have the same exact conversations that we had at that particular time. Because, okay, so we're not winning games. People start to make sense of that in basketball ways. And one guy I was looking at this one exchange, heavily downvoted, where it's like, hey, maybe it was a bad idea to, like, trade. We already have, like, we were bad on defense, and then we traded our best defensive player for another offensive player who maybe isn't giving us back what we want. It's obviously not working out in the win-loss total. Immediately gets completely brigaded by people who were like, A, you suck. B, Kyrie's a way better defender than I expected. And that's we echoed similar thoughts. We'd be like, hey, man-to-man, Kyrie's kind of a dynamic defender. Like, he takes a lot of risks and doesn't always pay off, but he's not bad when he's locked in. It was exactly the same talking points. And it's true. You know, nobody's wrong in that exchange, but just like it hasn't materialized it may for the Mavs yet. I don't know, but it never did for us. And it's just very interesting to see that parallel.
Do you ever see the show Love, Death, and Robots on Netflix?
I know what it is, but I haven't watched it. Yeah.
There's one of it's an anthology series. Most of it's animated. And there's one, I think it's Topher Grace, and it's him and his girlfriend. They're living in an apartment, and there's a freezer that was left. And they open the freezer, and there's a tiny civilization inside the freezer.
Right.
And within a day, it goes from prehistoric times to, like, nuclear holocaust.
They stole that from the future. A Simpsons episode, by the way, but yeah.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. And it's like the Nets fan base is like Topher Grace. Mm. And we're watching the evolution of the Kyrie experience for the Mavericks. We're seeing them, and they're rapidly it is so quick that they're going from elation with the trade. Wow, look at the offense, Kyrie without Luka. Wow, look at the offense, Kyrie and Luka. They're going to be unstoppable. To, oh, his defense isn't that bad. To, this defense is a disaster. This team is a disaster. Mm-hmm. No one's healthy. Kyrie has a whole Twitch session where he's talking about how people say that I'm the cancer, and how he literally called reporters the old bitter reporters. They only see me 3 hours in a day, and they judge me for who I am throughout the rest of the 21 hours. Yeah. And it's like, all right, I was like, I miss that Kyrie.
Yeah.
I miss him so much. And
it's also, weird time to have that stream too, because kind of again, classic unforced error in just kind of talking about reporters. Cause now Mavs reporters are like, wait, he signs blame to like 360 degrees and he's not very specific with any of those types of complaints. And so Mavs reporters are surely thinking like, is that me? I don't know. Did I do something wrong? Oh God.
He's talking about Alex Schiffer, if we're to be honest. You
know, we all old, know. Old. Wise for his years.
Yeah. And so I have enjoyed, and of course this matters. It, like, you know, we don't want to see Kevin Durant get hurt, but the Nets have the Suns first round pick, and the Suns are currently sitting at fourth in the West. And, you know, there's a potential. I mean, there are three and a half games up on the Timberwolves. Timberwolves are the seventh seed. Mm-hmm. Now, it would be pretty drastic if the Suns dropped all the way to the play-in tournament, but it is not impossible to think that they could fall to the sixth seed or whatever and then face the Grizzlies in the first round, but who knows what the Grizzlies are going to be. Anyway, so more importantly for the Mavericks are just a 500 team right now, and they have the potential. They are a game up on the Lakers, who the Lakers are the 11th seed, and they're a game up on the Pelicans, who are the 11th seed. There is potential for the Mavericks not to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. The Nets do not have their first-round pick. What the Nets do have is their 2029 pick, and everyone knows that if this team explodes and implodes, Luka may be out of there, and that 2029 pick immediately becomes one of the most valuable future draft picks any team could have. Mm-hmm. So, things to monitor.
Yes.
Brian, should we do just like light playoff thoughts? Just to
I'm into it. I mean, heck, I'm a believer now, Mike. You've got me believing.
So here's where the Nets are. Okay. They are the fifth seed right now, tied with the Knicks. They have a slight advantage over the Knicks because the Nets are 39-29, and the Knicks are 40-30. So from a win percentage, the Nets are slightly better by 0.003%. Or is that not percent, but whatever.
Percent.
By 3,000, yeah. And so they are the fifth. The Knicks are the sixth. They're securely, three and a half games over the Heat. The Heat are the seventh seed. The Nets are also three games behind the Cavaliers, who are the fourth seed. Mm-hmm. So the Nets are going to probably settle in somewhere between fifth and sixth, right? Here's who the potential matchups could be. Cleveland Cavaliers are fifth. The Nets the Cleveland Cavaliers are fourth. The Nets are fifth. So that is the projected matchup right now. If the Nets slip down to sixth, they could either play the 76ers, who are the three seed, or the Boston Celtics, who have been a little shaky, and the 76ers are on a win streak. The Celtics are the two seed. Now I ask you, Brian, and it could be the Milwaukee Bucks, but the Milwaukee Bucks are a game and a half on top of the top seed, and
yeah,
it'd be hard to envision them slipping all the way down to the three seed. Between the Celtics, 76ers, and Cavs, I'm not asking for deep analytics here. Give me your ranking.
Mm.
Give me your ranking of those teams.
I mean, I have PTSD from the Celtics series last year.
Interesting.
I have PTSD from just watching Joel Embiid ever. It really is traumatic for me. I've grown to hate the 76ers, just that style. James Harden, like I was permissive of it on our team, obviously, because I'm a homer. And more permissive of it on the Rockets because he was the only person that was just constantly trolling for fouls the entire game. But the combination of him and Joel Embiid is insufferable. It is so painful to watch that team. So for optics reasons and superficial reasons like that, maybe avoid them. I haven't watched a ton of Cavaliers games, but just knowing what I know about Celtics and 76ers, I'm almost opting for whatever that looks like over those two things. I know the Celtics have been waffling lately, but there's just such a big body of evidence to suggest that they can tune it up when they need to pretty quickly.
So I think the Cavs are definitively the team you most want to see.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. That's what you're saying. Yeah. And I agree with that. I mean, it's pretty clear that they are. I don't want to even be a hot take. Like I'm going to zig while everyone else is zagging. They are still ultimately the most inexperienced of those three teams. They have weaknesses, bigger weaknesses than the other ones. Of course, they're very good. They have a tremendous backcourt. But because most of their scoring is going to come from the backcourt, the Nets are uniquely suited to muck things up for perimeter players. And there's really like Jared Allen can dunk, right? Evan Mobley's good.
Yeah.
There's plenty of good to like about them. They're easily number one. You know, I may regret this statement, but I would rather see the Celtics than the 76ers because with the current roster the Nets have, with the wings and the length, the Celtics bulk of their scoring,
true,
Jalen and Jason. And if there's any team in the NBA now suited to stop wing scoring, it is the Nets.
Yep.
Now, it would be a tough matchup. It would be terrible.
No, I mean, and you're right. We did win against the Celtics and have not won against the 76ers with this current iteration of the team. So there is even, you know, for whatever it's worth, that little data.
Yeah. And think about this. If this scenario happens, so let's say the Nets fall to the sixth seed, but the Celtics fall to the three seed, that means that they have been continuing not to be at their optimal level. I remember here Bill Simmons had, after the Celtics, I think they lost to the Knicks recently too. The Knicks have had a better record than the Celtics since like December. Mm-hmm. Since the end, I think it's the start or end of December. The Celtics haven't been as dominant as they are in our minds, right? Because they were so dominant to start the year. And there's the whole Joe Mazzulla piece of this. Like, Doc Rivers is not the perfect coach, but he's the most experienced coach. Joe Mazzulla was unheard of as of a year ago, and now is leading a team that may win the NBA championship. There is an element of, now, I don't know how much I can say, like, Jacques Vaughn's a, you know, the advantage. I love Jacques, but I'm just, I don't, I can't shade. State huge, that huge now. Shade. Yeah. But it's like, you kind of go into the series and you're like, okay, the Nets can definitely defend the Celtics. Mm-hmm. Can the Nets score? I don't know. But they definitely can defend the Celtics, and the coaching situation is definitely not an advantage for the Celtics. Mm. If anything, it's an advantage for the Nets. So, like, Joe Mazzulla doesn't know how to call a timeout. It's the thing, like, Steve Nash and Joe Mazzulla. No time, if you just have to learn how to call a timeout.
Yeah.
That's one of the things you have to learn. And the thing that scares me about the 76ers is what, you know, kind of what we saw in the Nuggets game, where it's like, God, like, Jokic just, he was so good, and Embiid is as good as Jokic. And the 76ers have the Harden piece of it. The only thing about them is that they play so slowly. They don't like transition basketball, and they slow everything down. That does play a little bit into the Nets' hands, because the Nets, do like to push it in transition. The Nets do like to defend in the half court. The Nets are very effective with this new roster in defending in the half court. That it's like, the 76ers, it's going to be hard for them to get buckets unless if Embiid is like just MVP dude. So
you've tucked me into it, Mike. I think your reasoning is good.
Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I kind of do. I mean, yeah. I mean, just in the wing defense versus wing offense qualifier alone, I think that that's a, yeah. I mean, and again, just watching the 76ers, just having Joel Embiid do that just out of the post, game in, game out, is just, it's toxic, and I don't like it, and I don't want it.
Let me ask you this, Path, just real quick. Current Path, just looking at them, like when Nets getting to the NBA Finals, would you rather play the Cavs and Bucks or the Celtics and 76ers? You know what I mean? Like, in the,
yeah, I do want to beat the Cavs. I want to dodge the Bucks, I will say, if I can. I think the Bucks.
You would rather the path of the Celtics and 76ers?
If I have to choose the combo?
You know what I'm saying? Like, first round would be the Cavs or the 76ers. Then the next round, if you played the 76ers and you beat them,
I mean,
magically.
Here's what you're asking. Do you want to, because, like, I think, like, of the two.
Do you want to play the Bucks in the second round or the third, basically?
I mean, is there any way we can avoid both the 76ers and the Bucks? I mean, if we can get a Cavs to Celtics run. It's impossible.
It is that. I mean, that is possible, because the Celtics, I mean, they're a game and a half back from the Bucks. It's not impossible that that's going to happen over the next, I mean, what is there, like, 15 games left in the season or whatever it is?
We're going to be talking about the playoffs here soon, Mike. I mean, we're on a little bit of a winning streak here. I mean, not really, but we're picking and choosing 5-1 winning streak.
God, that,
a gentleman's winning
again,
streak. Yeah.
When we talk about this, and, like, I'm getting excited thinking about the possibility of Cavs and then the Celtics, like, we're being very reasonable. Like, ultimately, the odds are going to be that the Nets don't make it out of the first round of the playoffs. But if you're trying to lay out the best scenario, and NBA playoffs are so much about matchups, like, there's been teams that we think are juggernauts that get upset in the playoffs because of a bad matchup. The Nets are a bad matchup team for certain teams. If you rely on perimeter wing scoring, the Nets have the ability to stop you. Now, again, can the Nets put up the offense?
Yeah.
Good thing is that I think they're going to be a high variance team in terms of three-point shooting, because, I mean, they can, like, Bridges is a good three-point shooter. Cam's a good three-point shooter. Dorian Finney-Smith, he could have a couple of games where he goes 5-for-7 like he did against the Nuggets. Seth Curry, Joe Harris, like, there are Spencer if he hits threes.
Yeah.
You know?
And to that point, like, I don't know how much you can actually do this or like say that this is something that you put on the matchup sheet as you're doing analysis, but like on the outskirts of this, and we've talked about this before, it's like the injury report dynamic of the thing is very much in our favor for pretty much any of these matchups, not just because our roster is so like sort of weirdly immune to injury at the moment. Just like that's part of like Mikal Bridges. Now, I don't want to jinx anything. I'm going to put this in a whisper. I should and bury it, but
if Bridges gets hurt, a guy who played 360 games in a row, this Nets training staff may need a little peek at.
God doesn't like it.
Nets training staff may need a little peek under the hood.
Yeah.
Fair
enough. But, and then also combine that with the fact that like our depth is just so, we scale horizontally, as they say in the biz, Mike. We just don't have like such inflection points. Like, you know, our roles overlap very neatly. There's not like, hey, if we're out Kyrie or KD or any of the, you know, many or of the third stars that have joined us, it's just not a real game and we may as well not play it. That dynamic is out the door. Kicked to the curb, Mike. Done with it. Let's get out of here.
I mean, I'm fired up. Yeah. I'm honestly fired up now.
Yeah, we did it. We did our 45 minutes. Get us out of here.
I'm not pretending it's going to be a championship run. I'm just saying I think the Nets, from what they were 2 weeks ago, left for dead. People are calling for everyone to get fired, and Joe Sidis helped the team. I do think there's that rough sketch of a spoiler potential. And if this team does win in the first round, it would be better than what they did last year with KD and Kyrie.
Say it with your chest,
I think that's
Mike.
Important. Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuys, NetsDaily.com. Time to get behind that paywall.
BeAthletic.com/GlueGuys.
And thank you all for listening. We'll be back as soon as we can.
Bye.
Bye.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.